Thank you for downloading this podcast from policyreview.tv.
Thanks for that, Kate, and thanks for reading that bit of the blog. I was going to say thank you to everybody in the room for the work that you do, because that blog's an example of what I see every time I go to my staff. And the thing that always strikes me is what emotional resilience you must have. Because every time I engage with families and the people we work with, they stay with me. So the fact that you do that on the front line all of the time shows to me that you've got incredible emotional resilience. And if you look at Michael West's work that says you've got to create positive cultures to develop positive outcomes, and in the health space you're working in a negative environment because of the stress in the system and the emotional position that people find themselves in, you know, it's in our gift to support frontline staff to have the easiest way of working possible, because what you face every day is a challenge to your emotional resilience. But what you also do is perform little miracles of kindness, care and compassion that change the lives of people every day. And that doesn't get talked about. I'll talk a bit about that today. That doesn't get talked about enough by anybody, because it happens behind closed doors. And there isn't a building to say there's a hospital that we can all go and look at. These are people's lives, and this is modern Britain in the 21st century. And I think that I'd like to preface, I was going to preface my presentation by talking about that, and I'm really pleased that Kate read some of that blog out. I was also going to say that I'm not anti-hospital. When everyone talks about community services, people say, well, you must be against hospitals then. Now, I want the hospital to be brilliant. You know, if I need hospital care, when my family needs hospital care, I want it to be have exactly the same aspects that Jeremy talked about in terms of, you know, what patients' roles are. I want it to be well coordinated. I want it to be in a team who knows me and all of that sort of stuff. So I'm very pro-hospital and pro-patient. And I think that the other thing I would say is that we've got an opportunity at this time to change 21st century healthcare to meet the needs of 21st century patients. Because at the moment, what we've got is a system designed in the 20th century around elective care, effectively, which is trying to solve the issues of the 21st century. And in the 21st century, what we've got are older people living longer with more chronic conditions, children with complex disabilities who would have died in the past, surviving, having lifelong needs, things that can never be cured. And what we need to do is focus on community services, because we're used to working and supporting people to live their lives to the full. So I thought I'd start there and then just do a little experiment. I mean, one of the things that I always do with my staff is ask them, you know, who's been in the service the longest? And I can't imagine anyone's going to answer yes to this, but has anyone been in the NHS longer than 20 years? Lots of you. Okay, anyone been longer than 30? All right, lots of you. 40? Oh, there are some. So if you've been in the NHS for longer than 40 years, has it generally been the case that somebody said to you this every year, this is going to be the toughest year? So it's always the toughest year. Now, what I would say to you is that for a change, and I've been in the NHS for 23 years, these are unprecedented times, and this is the toughest time. This is the time for change like no other. And that's because of all the things that we've heard about already. So the financial challenge, the downturn and the impact that has on people's health, the requirement to take 25% of costs out, demography, changing expectations, and this sort of stuff. So I've never been in the NHS during a period where it's open season on the service, the quality, and we've seen significant failures of leadership. And my personal perspective is, if you think it's Francis is the only time we've talked about this, you need to wake up and remember about Maidstone, baby Peter, six lives of people with learning disability who were neglecting hospitals, ad infinitum. What it does mean, though, is that we're in an environment where we need to change, and I think that means we need to take a fresh perspective. And I'm talking to the converted here a bit, but I don't think people talk about this enough. We need to take a completely fresh perspective about the NHS. For too long, we've looked at things through the wrong end of the microscope. Telescope. So politicians constantly talk about hospitals as if that's the only place that care gets delivered. And I was talking to a group of new entrant graduate management trainees recently and said, OK, let's talk about the NHS and what's your experience of it, what do you think about it? And they all talked about hospitals. So I said, OK, let's do a little chat. Where does most care happen? And they all said, in the hospital. And then what about, who else does work? Well, GPs. And what about community staff? Yeah, they might do a bit. We drew a triangle. It was this shape. And then I said to them, well, actually, you know, it's the other way around. And this is critical because when people talk about shifting care to the community, you immediately get this narrative as if there's nothing going on already in communities. So what we're doing is taking work going on in the hospital and moving it to the community where people are waiting and willing to take it on because they're not doing anything. Nothing could be further from the truth. And what's really helpful now is that people like Keith Willett, so Professor Keith Willett, just done a piece of work on urgent care, and he's starting to show this sort of analysis nationally. So if you look at what actually happens in the NHS around urgent care, you know, 438 million health-related visits to the pharmacy for drugs and appliances, 300 million attendances at GPs and so on, only 20 million or so attendances at A&E. So this sense that actually the vast majority of care is about supported self-care and care in the home. Now, we need to keep focusing on this, and the thing that's missing in that, I've told Professor Keith Willett, is you haven't mentioned district nursing, community nursing for children or anything like that at all. And what I see throughout the winter period are my staff trudging through the snow to get to palliative patients to make sure that they're getting the support they need, because you can only get that right once. And we must start to see the service in the round if we're going to have a viable and sustainable 21st century NHS. And that includes the work of community nursing. That includes the work of community nursing at scale in a way which other countries would love to have and we must exploit. So let's take an example of what that means. So in Birmingham, for example, there are more beds in the community where people are being looked after at home by district nursing teams or in community intermediate care beds or in special step-down beds than there are across the whole of the acute hospital estate. And I think if you looked at every city in the UK and every patch, it would be the same. But we don't have this narrative. So I think there's a fresh perspective required on how we look at the NHS. And it's helpful that the RCP have come on the back of that with their Future Hospital Commission, which goes part way to saying hospitals need to get with the programme. The kind of people who are coming into hospital regularly, you should know them. Because they're people with long-term conditions, they're older people, they're people you need to approach differently and work in a system-wide approach to delivering care. So we know that this is the answer, so we need to take a fresh perspective. And one of the best ways of describing this for me came from one of our patients called Elsie. So Elsie is in her 70s. She cared for her husband for the last 3 years of his life. And what she talked about was, first year, I just looked after him myself. He's my husband, I would, wouldn't I? And then after a year, I decided that I couldn't cope anymore, I was too tired. So I asked for some help. And she said, it was like someone gave me a bunch of keys with 15 keys on it, but I didn't know which door opened, which key opened which door, or what was behind any of the doors. And sometimes I'd get some good stuff, and sometimes I just wouldn't. I was left confused. And after another year, I was probably more tired and frustrated. And all the things that Jeremy talked about around what we need for patients didn't exist. And then she said after a year, in the final year, this new integrated team came in that had been introduced around health and social care. And it was like somebody gave me a golden key. And the golden key opened every door. And behind every door was what I needed. And she said, I felt lifted. And I felt like I could cope. Now, that's what we need, isn't it? That's what Jeremy talks about. That's the National Voices definition of what patients want in their lives. And if in the 21st century in Britain, what we're seeing is more than half of expenditure is on older people, more than half of expenditure is on older people with long-term conditions, 70% of bed days in hospitals are for older people, isn't it about time we started thinking about how people live their lives in communities and do something about it? Now, if we're going to do that, I think I want to do something quite serious, which is let's stop talking about the burning platform. You know, I don't know if people have seen Peter Fonda's little film about this, but it's wonderful. What it says is the burning platform comes from an oil rig in the North Sea that's on fire. Guy dives off it, decides that he's going to die on the burning platform, so he jumps into the North Sea, and by some miracle he survives. And he's picked up in a boat afterwards and said, why did you jump? And he said, better probable death than certain death. Now, I don't think that that's a way for us to redesign healthcare through fear. I think what we've got to do is move from a burning platform of we've got to save money to a burning ambition of why is it that people don't get the right level of care in the right way that supports them to live the lives they want to in their communities where they want to be treated. And if they need hospital care, they get fantastic hospital care. Why isn't that the case? And how do we move from this burning platform to a burning ambition where that's always the case? Now, if we're going to do that, the evidence suggests we need to get serious about some things. And we've got some assets in this country that we shouldn't take lightly. The first is general practice. And we've got the finest clinical database in the world, about every person who lives in this country. What do we do with it? Not enough. We don't do enough around what potential risks people have in terms of becoming acutely ill, if they're ill already, or becoming acutely ill if their family have a history of it. And there are risk stratification tools that can support that. So if you put together risk stratification in every general practice, with systematic self-management and support, with communities helping support people, and you have integrated teams of health, social care and voluntary sector workers around families, all the evidence suggests you get shorter length of stay, higher quality outcomes and improvements to the cost base. So that's what we need to do at scale. That's what we're doing in my city and my system, and I would say that's what we need to do across the NHS. And the consequence of that is we're thinking about things from a different perspective. We're looking at things through the right end of the telescope, not the wrong one, which is what's going on in each of our communities and how do we support people to live better lives. So in Leeds, in the future, what we'll have into health and social care services is a single gateway. And we've already got a single point of urgent referral we'll build on. There'll then be one of two responses. You either have a rapid response, so within 2 hours you are sorted out, because you might have care needs, you might have health needs, you might have a social need. But through voluntary sector, health or social care intervention, you will get sorted out. Or you have an ongoing care and support need because you know who you are and it's not urgent and we can just help you with it. And underpinning that, there's a recovery, rehabilitation, reablement service, because too many people, and we all see this, spend time in the wrong setting and their health deteriorates so that their long-term outcomes are poorer. So we too often see people with dementia decline in hospital, not through the hospital's fault, just because the care's not around to deliver the right sort of care, and they end up in long-term care when they could have been maintained at home for longer. So that's what we're doing within a wider approach to saying if we spend most of our cash and time and energy and resources on people with long-term conditions who are older, well, let's design the whole system around them then. And let's work from the patient, their family and friends, their communities, with wraparound primary care teams, neighbourhood teams and specialist services and beds available close to where they live and the best hospital care possible, because the hospital is free to do what it does best as part of an integrated organisation and system. So all of that is fantastic and all of that, I think, is part of the way forward. And if we do this at scale, then I think we can have a burning ambition for the NHS, which might mean that if I'm standing here in 10 years' time, we might be having a similar conversation to the one we have around mental health. So we wouldn't think it was reasonable now, would we, to lock people away because they had a mental health issue. And in the 80s and 90s, when the Mental Health Act was introduced, it was really contentious to move to care in the community, and it required huge changes and transformation, but we did it. And I would love it in 10 years' time if we started talking about, why did we have all those older people in hospital? Why did we think that was okay? And what were we doing to poor hospital staff and everybody else in maintaining that, when what we should have had is a completely different system which meets their needs, which is what we should have in the next 5 to 10 years. Now, one of the things that's really important in all of this is culture. And I mentioned Francis, and so did Jeremy earlier. And I think as community nurses, community staff, the culture is different for one very simple reason. You know, we are in charge of the care environment most of the time. It's somebody's house. It's their house. It's their rules. And I think that brings a different sort of dynamic in terms of the power relationship between the patient and family and the professional. And if we're going to move towards a system whereby that's an important part of the future, because more people are supported to look after themselves, that needs to be the ethos of the whole NHS. And I think you've got a role, a clear leadership role, a clear clinical leadership role to say this is the way things get done, because this is the way we do it now. And leadership does matter. Leadership does matter. And this is, I think, going to be my final point. So when it comes down to it, that thing about Francis that I always put up is not the 290 recommendations about the system, It's his observation that Midstaffs was all about a failure of leadership on the wards, in the organisation, in the system. And for me, leadership matters. If we're going to move to a system whereby patients feel like they're co-producing their own health, they're supported to live their lives the way they can, and they engage in their communities more meaningfully, the people who've got to lead that are the frontline teams and communities working together and working differently with their social care and voluntary sector counterparts. And this is a picture of me and Norman Lamb talking to a group of frontline clinicians and patients from across my services, general practice and the acute hospital. And Norman Lamb came to see us about what we're doing in Leeds, and he didn't meet me and the big wigs first, he met the staff, because the staff are the ones who have been leading the change. Because if you're going to change someone's mind, you have to change their behaviour. And if you can change their behaviour, you have to change their mind. And the people who change their mind are their peers and the patients. So there's a big leadership challenge at every level in the NHS to get this right. And I think everyone in this room could ask themselves, what am I going to do to demonstrate that all the brilliant things that we do are part of the future for the NHS? All the brilliant things that we do are about bringing back public confidence and building that burning ambition for the future. Because what Michael West says, and his research published last week is one of the seminal documents, I think, for the system, is that if you create a positive culture with engaged staff, you get better health outcomes. And every day, staff are leading and delivering in that way. And I think if you look at this quote, I would say that my experience of my staff on the front line, working in patients' homes and communities, is exactly like this. And the challenge for me is to create the environment that they deserve so that they can flourish. Because as Don Berwick says, you know, he's looked from across the water at our system with some envy, because your nation's commitment to healthcare as a human right and to healing as a shared mission is second to none. And all of that is possible through you, only you. And that was a letter to every member of NHS staff. Now, I think that if we can create the right environment where people are leading new services in new ways in the community, then what we'll have is a 21st century NHS that's fit for the future. Because when it comes down to it, in my organisation, all staff at induction are asked just to write what they think high quality care means to them. And they usually talk about thoughtfulness, kindness, care, having sufficient staff who are well trained to work with patients, who empathise and so on. And for me, what all this boils down to is, can we deliver the right staff in the right place with the right skills for the future? We've seen some of the challenges from that Crystal's outlined in terms of, you know, several places in the country they're not even doing district nursing training, which seems a scandal to me. Some parts of the country don't have 24/7 community services, which seems completely wrong. We need to get the staff with the right skills into the system so that we can transform care, because it's what you deserve and what patients need. Thanks very much.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from policyreview.tv. For more details, go to www.policyreview.tv. Please note that this audio is subject to copyright and cannot be used by other broadcasters or for commercial gain.